The It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Welcome to It's Time for Coffee. I'm Jeanette Tapley, your host and internet bestie. Here on It's Time for Coffee, we will help each other find joy, sisterhood, and lasting friendship. We are all about Bible-based love and teachings to help us grow into the friends we long to be and to nourish the relationships that we already have. Now, I'm not a theologian or a Bible scholar. I'm just your pal, Jeanette, here to help you and encourage you. Join me each week as we sit down with a friend to be encouraged and reminded that we are heard, valued, and never alone, no matter what season we find ourselves in. So grab your cup, fill it up, because friend, it's time for coffee. Hey, it's time for coffee. I'm so glad that you're here. Today we are sitting down with a new friend, and I am just so excited for you to meet her. Stacey Morgan is the author of The Astronaut's Wife, and today we are talking all about her book and her life as her husband was circling the globe during the start of the pandemic. This story is incredible. Stacey's is incredible, and I'm just so excited for you to listen in to hear what it's like for your husband to be blasted off in a rocket, to hear what it's like to be entering into the start of a pandemic while your spouse is in space, and what it was like having him come home. I am just so thankful for Stacey and her story. And without further ado, you guys, because I just want to get into this episode, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey, y'all, I am so excited. Like, I've fangirled a little already, but I'm just excited to be sitting down with a new friend, Stacey Morgan. Her new book, The Astronaut's Wife, is coming out. If it's not already out, it will be out soon. We are just excited to be talking about her story and her incredible family. So, Stacey, hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to talk to you.
That's so fun. Okay, Stacey, the first question I ask everybody is, what's in your cup? Do you have a cup of coffee with you or a cup of anything?
I do. And yes, and it's a strong one. It's an espresso. I will admit I drink a lot of coffee. I have, at the beginning of the pandemic, we bought a fancy coffee machine because we were trapped in the house. At the time, felt like the right thing to do. And so I drink like so much coffee. It's like I can smell color by the end of the day. I mean, It's like unapologetically, I'm sure, an unhealthy amount of coffee.
You're my kind of girl, though. I like that. I did have a cup of coffee before church the other day because we have an espresso machine as well. So I had made a cup of coffee, and then we went to church, and I had made another cup of coffee. And then I'm sitting there, like, you know, praying, and then all the things of all the week is coming into my head, and I'm getting overwhelmed, and all of a sudden I'm having, like, anxiety. I don't struggle with anxiety, so, like, Lord, why are we dealing with this anxiety? What's going on? I text my husband a quick, like, SOS, like, I don't know what's going on. I'm feeling really anxious. Get home from church, famished and angry, and and anxiety ridden. And I'm like, oh, I had 4 shots of espresso before noon on an empty stomach.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I've been at events where, like, I'm holding a microphone and my hand is shaking and I'm going, like, man, I am really, like, why am I so nervous? I don't feel like I'm normally this nervous. And then afterwards I'm like, oh yeah, I had like 6 cups of coffee before I got up here. This isn't nervousness. This is just straight up my body, like, unable to, you know, function properly at this level of caffeine.
That is hilarious. Well, okay, Stacey, will you tell us just a little bit about you and your family? Don't get into, like, the whole meat of it all, but, like, tell us just a little bit about y'all.
Sure. Okay. So I'm Stacey Morgan. I have 4 kids, 2 high schoolers, a junior higher, and an elementary school kid. So pray for me on that one. And I currently live in Texas, but my husband's in the military. And so we've lived all over the United States. And we live in Texas now because he is an astronaut. And so obviously we're going to talk about kind of the uniqueness of that. But even before that, we've lived kind of an unusual life because of all the different opportunities afforded to us, kind of living all over the place and different jobs and just different people and different environments that, you know, if you're willing to say yes and try new things, then a lot of doors open for you. So that's kind of, that's the quick overview of who we are.
I'm in New Braunfels, Texas. Where
yes.
are you?
I'm down in Friendswood, just south of Houston.
Oh, you're not far. That's great. Okay. No. That's so fun. I'm like, that's Texas. That's exciting. and how long have you and Drew been married, your husband Drew?
We've been married 21 years. I was like, I met him when I was 18, which is terrifying because my oldest is now 18. And of course, when I was 18, 19, I was like, I know everything about the world. And like, you know, like I'm sure I will never be wiser than I am right now. And so now that I have an 18-year-old, I'm like, oh, now I get why my parents were so concerned. So we've been married for 21 years. I knew him for a few years before that. So everybody can do the math and figure out how old I am.
That's fine. I'm not fast enough to do the math, so I won't even try. But my husband and I met when I was 17. We were engaged very quickly after I was engaged my senior year of high school. We were still married, like, thank goodness, it has, you know, we've done the work. But having kids, like, I have a 15-year-old, and like him dating and stuff, I'm like, there's a very real chance that you could start dating the person you marry soon. And that makes me want to die.
Yes, you're exactly right. You're like, no, I don't. I want it to happen, but I also know never actually want that to happen ever.
It's the weirdest thing because I'm like, Jesse and I high five all the time. Like, look what we've done. Look at what we've built. Look how good God has been. But then I look at them. I'm like, mm-mm. I don't know if it's possible a second time around. No. So good. Okay. So you guys have been married 21 years. Does that mean you guys have done this whole military career together?
Yeah. We met when we were both cadets at West Point. So we were still an undergrad together. And so we have been together from the beginning. And my husband is also a doctor. And so after undergrad, he went to medical school. I was finishing my undergrad. And then I worked for a while he was finishing his medical education. And then we went right into kind of the Army and special operations community life, which was great. Like, we really enjoyed it. And having that shared experience when we were younger, both being in the military, helped, you know, helped with some understanding that I know, like, if some other spouses, sometimes other wives, had trouble kind of understanding the warrior ethos and why would you want to do this? And, you know, it can be hard to understand kind of that warrior mindset. And most of our career was, you know, full on deployments to Afghanistan and Iraq and all different places. And it was tough, but we were all in, because you have to be all in order to survive in that life. And so in the process, we had those four kids in different places, and Drew deployed all the time and did all kinds of dangerous things. And that was just part of what we did. You know, I held down the home front and did other things and managed the family and raised these kids. Like, and this was just part of their life. It wasn't a big deal when their dad left or wasn't home, because that was just kind of part of their normal rhythm. Mm-hmm. So moving down here to Texas was a little bit different, because it did totally take us off one path and put us on another.
Yeah. My husband is in a very different line of work. He's in the oil field, and his schedule is always very confusing to everybody else, but it's what our family has already always known. So it's similar in the sense of, like, your dad works four nights in the middle of the week. What do you guys do? And they're like, we just come home from school. We hug our dad and he goes to work. Like, what do you mean? What do I do? Like,
yeah. Yeah,
hang out with my dad. And so it's interesting when it doesn't look like everybody else think it should look. How long were you in the military for?
Well, just 2 years. Okay. Halfway through West Point, I transferred out. But we always joke that, like, they've gotten more than their money's worth out of me as a spouse than they ever would have gotten out of me if I had stayed in. And it's been great. You know, I think. There's been several things in my, you know, seasons in my life where, looking back, I'm like, yeah, God put me there in that season at that time for a reason. Mm-hmm. And when it was time to go, he made that clear. And that's one of them. You know, those 2 years that I spent there kind of building that foundation of understanding for that lifestyle, when that season was over and God made it clear that it was time for me to transfer someone else and finish somewhere else, like, it was a difficult transition, but has been invaluable. Like, now looking back, I'm like, yeah, I needed to have experienced that. I could never be the spouse and the, you know, the teammate that I am now to my husband if we had not started kind of on that common footing together.
Yeah, I love that, because there's so much of that, like the tearing down to rebuild the man up, that if you hadn't experienced that, to walk into this, like, teammate career, it can get lost on a lot of people, or they get angry with the military. A lot of spouses are angry with the military, like they're just taking them away or they're taking advantage, all this stuff. And so I love that you have a different heart about it. That's really, really beautiful. Okay. You stood in a dusty field and watched your husband literally blast into space.
Yes.
I have so many questions. Like, what were you feeling? What were you thinking? And then what did you do afterwards? Like, how do you like, okay, he's off he goes. Now I'm going to go to the grocery store. Like, what do you do?
Yeah. So I should say, so my husband launched on a Russian rocket. And if people are like, well, I don't understand why did he launch on a Russian rocket? Well, this was 2019. Mm-hmm. So, just to give like a 2-sentence history lesson so people have context.
Please,
like,
thank you
so
much.
Space shuttle, which we all remember from our childhoods, ended in 2011. And then we did not start launching again from U.S. soil until just last year when we started launching SpaceX Crew Dragon from Florida again.
Right.
So between 2011 and 2020, the only way to get astronauts to and from the International Space Station is to hitch a ride on a Russian rocket. So in 2019, when it was my husband's turn, we had to fly to the other side of the globe. And the Russians launched their rockets from Kazakhstan, which is a former Soviet republic. And it was a really cool experience because while Kazakhstan is its own country now, when it was, you know, when the Baikonur Cosmodrome was built in, you know, it secretly back in the 1950s in the height of the space race, that was part of the USSR. And they built this secret city like out of nothing, in the middle of nowhere with one secret purpose, which was to launch rockets into outer space, which is totally cool. And so when you go there, it's this weird, it's a city built for this one purpose. And you go to the Cosmodrome, here's all this technology, you know, technology that's obviously designed all about rockets and space. But this country is so desolate, at least in that part of the country, it's very desolate. I mean, there's like wild camels roaming around, and it was the middle of summer. It's like crazy hot in the summer, like 100 plus even in the evenings. In the wintertime, it gets crazy cold. So I was so glad it was at least in the summer. And this is a historical place. And so you're walking around and there's like still hammers and sickles on the wall, and the Russians are still operating it, but it is in Kazakhstan. So it's very different culturally than what like we remember from Shuttle or currently from SpaceX Dragon. So you literally drive onto the Cosmodrome property, and it's kind of what you would imagine an old Soviet space base would be like. It's like the roads are kind of bumpy, and then you end up at this, you know, kind of big weird field, and it's literally just like a field, a little grandstand, and there's no big countdown clocks, there's no loudspeakers. It's just like you go off to this field, and in the distance you can see the rocket. And just to give a little context, like if you go to Florida, the closest you can get to a rocket is about 10 miles. Like that's like the closest like public viewing area, and you'll still feel it in like on your chest, and it's a moving experience even from 10 miles out. Well, in Baikonur, the rocket is only a mile away. So little different safety standards, little different experience. So you can literally see that rocket like right there. And when it launches, I mean, like you feel it on the ground, you feel it, the wave of sound, like literally, and the rumble rolls up your body, and it's so bright because it's just like this massive, you know, amount of explosives that is just, it's just overwhelming. So I would say I was there with my 4 kids. They give you this NASA escort, which is another astronaut, a friend of ours. And his job was pretty much to just take care of us and tell us where to go. And we've got some friends and family with us. And I think if I had not had friends and family and my kids with me, it is such an overwhelming experience, both physically, because you're traveling to the other side of the country. I mean, sorry, the other side of the world. And so it's like jet lag and the heat and weird foods and all the stuff that comes with like uncomfortable foreign travel. And you're about to witness this event, which is either going to be incredible and like one of the best days of your life, or the worst day of your life.
Yeah.
And you're not quite 100% sure which way it's going to go, because, you know, stuff happens, right? Like life happens, even with the best of training and the best of equipment. And and so the fact that you're standing in this field, the sun has just gone down, It felt almost like a movie set because it's like you're waiting in the dark and here's this rocket in front of you. And over to our left are these foreign reporters who are jabbing into their cameras and all these different languages. And then you're just looking at your watch and you've got these kids with you and you're trying to hold it together so that you don't scare your children more than they may already be feeling. And then of course you have these friends and family that you don't want to embarrass yourself in front of. And then you're just waiting for this moment. And then, you know, like there's no countdown, there's no announcements. And so you just know that they're going to launch that rocket at exactly the minute they say they are, not a minute earlier, not a minute later. And then all of a sudden, like you see this explosion. Thank goodness they warn you that it's going to be a little scary. You're going to see this huge explosion. Yeah. But that's really the rocket's like initially lighting, and then the way it kind of funnels the fire, it just feels really scary. But it's okay. Like,
that's fire,
normal.
And it's right that's by my normal. Husband. I don't really know.
That's right. And so like as it's lifting off the ground, and you're feeling these vibrations, and the ground is shaking. This combination of like terror of like, oh my gosh, what is like any second something terrible could happen. Mm-hmm. Also kind of awe-inspiring to see this machine that humans have built that is just, I mean, you feel the power of it. Like, oh my gosh, you know, is this going to go into space? And it takes about 9 minutes to get to where all the fuel is expended and all the stages have fallen off. And then they're kind of in relative safety. I use it like relative term because then they still are like in a capsule the size of a minivan, you know, like orbiting the Earth in space. But at least with all the fuel gone, it doesn't feel like you're going to have some massive explosion at that point. So it is. Yeah, it's like so incredibly emotional. It's like 100 emotions at once all pegged out. So you almost feel, at least I almost felt like numb because it was like your brain and your body are just like, we're feeling everything. Plus trying to hold it together for these children. And then, yeah, it's like you're watching it until, you know, it just gets farther and farther and farther away until it's this little dot in the sky, like a star. And then, yeah, like if this was a movie, that's when they would roll the credits. And you'd be like, wow, that was an interesting movie. In real life, you're like, okay, everybody, you know, like, I mean, so there's hugging and everybody's like, wow. I mean, it is kind of one of, like if you've ever experienced something really massive or scary with other people, like, you know, when it's all over and there's the relief, like everybody's jibber jabbering about it and talking about it, like, oh my gosh, you feel that. But then it was like, all right, does anybody remember where we parked the van? you know, and you got to like make your way back to the van. And then you have like a 45 minute drive back to our hotel where we had some time to rest before then seeing them actually enter the space station. But it is this funny process of like these super high moments of like emotion and pride and terror and nervousness. And then this drop off, you know, where you're like just riding in a car for 45 minutes. And it's kind of like, you know, just this weird up and down that it can be kind of exhausting after a while. Cause you're just not your
the
body
high and lows, like the adrenaline and then the, oh my gosh, what just happened to the adrenaline.
It's like extreme adrenaline relief. And afterwards you're exhausted, but your mind is racing and your heart is racing and you just can't, this idea of when I would think about him, like by the time we got back to the hotel and I'm laying in bed and I'm thinking about him, that he's like in space orbiting the Earth. It's like, felt like trying to ponder infinity. Like, you know, it's true, but like you haven't really seen any proof of it yet.
Right. So right. It's just you're like space is such a big and beautiful thing. It's like, how is my husband up there? Like,
yeah, it's just, I mean, it's one thing to watch a movie or even to see, like, obviously once we got here, we got to know people, like, you know, for years, we've been watching Friends in space. Yeah. And you're like, oh yeah, there's my friend, whatever. And that's kind of weird. But even getting used to seeing friends and people we know really well do it, nothing compares to when it's your own person and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so weird. This is so weird. So like, strange. I know that guy. Like, he can never remember where to put everything after he empties the dishwasher. But now he's in space. This is so weird. So weird.
So weird. Well, and like you said, you launched him into space July of 2019.
Yes.
And then March of 2020 happens. He's still in space. when the pandemic officially hits U.S. soil.
Yes.
He has a really beautiful quote that he said right before he came home, something along the lines of, a world in crisis is still a world worth coming home to. Is that similar? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. He said it on Some Good News with John Krasinski.
Right. First of all, he met John Krasinski. Can you even?
Oh, I wish that was true. It was all pre-recorded because I was like, oh, sweet. And I want to meet John Krasinski. And he was like, I don't know. We're just pre-recording it. But still a great quote. We'll give him credit
still
for that.
Still a beautiful quote. And we'll give him all that credit because they didn't feed that in that line. I won't, even if you tell me they did, I won't believe you. So what a beautiful thing to have heard him say as he's orbiting around the world. But you're holding down the fort like you've done every other time he's left, right? Like he goes on these missions, all of that. What was different about, one, him being in space?
Yeah.
Weird. And two, starting to manage life throughout this pandemic while he's in space.
Yeah.
These are words that don't make any sense. Like that, right. That sentence is so weird.
Yes. So, I mean, I'll say while he was gone, I thought it would be a lot like when he'd been gone for deployments, and many aspects of it were, but there were a few big things that made it dramatically different and like more stressful. Of course, the most obvious one is like, if something really bad happened on a deployment, they will send you home. You know, if something really, really bad happened. Obviously there's no coming home early from space.
Right.
So that's a little bit, even though it's like everyone's healthy, everyone's fine, but the fact that you know if something bad happened, you're on your own, you know, like he's not coming home early, and that he would have to be from his side, that feeling of helplessness of like not being able to help or participate if something really bad went wrong. That adds a level, just kind of like just raises the level of stress across the board.
Yeah.
And then I would say the other big thing was like on military deployments, you know, the times of greatest risk were secret. You know, I might, sometimes when big things are happening, they would do a communications blackout. And so, you know, you would know something was going on, so I wouldn't hear from him for a couple of days, or you'd see something on the news and it would be like this, you know, this thing is happening or whatever. But I was never like, you know, nobody had like a GoPro on their head, you know, going in to do these secret dangerous things. And so you're, you know, you've got just enough like kind of mental distance that you can kind of like have a little bit different level of comfort. Yeah. And you also know that, again, if something goes wrong, there are certain things in place where you will hear about it first and someone will come and like be there with you. And that there's just these processes that are going to try to buffer, you know, the bad experiences as much as possible. Now, when he was on orbit, the times of highest risk, launch, landing, spacewalks, all of which I'm watching live with the rest of the world, sometimes with television cameras also on me. And so that level of stress of thinking like, my gosh, if something goes poorly, like for example, the launch, the world will be watching this with me. I will be experiencing it with my children in real time at the same time as everyone else in the world. Like there will not be I will not be able to process this privately on my own before, like, in essence, kind of the entire world experiencing it with me. And that is crazy. Cause just seeing it, even when you're spacewalking, like literally I'm looking at a camera view that is like, as if I'm looking through his own eyes. Because they have that camera mounted right there on top of their helmet. So I'm seeing, you know, you see their hands like actually moving in front of you on the camera view. And so that's just, it's very surreal, like to kind of be there with them in these most dangerous moments.
Yeah.
And that adds a level of stress that was, I think, more intense than I anticipated, prior at military deployments.
Yeah.
But when in February, go ahead.
Oh, good. I was gonna say, did you have like a way to like, if this, like, I don't even know, because you don't want to like hope. I mean, you're not hoping, but you don't want to plan for the worst. But it's like, if this happens, I will knock a camera out of my face. No, that's not kind. I will like. Did you have to think about like, what will I do? How will I compose myself in a manner where I don't know? Like, do you even think about that? I'm a Enneagram type 9. So then like sometimes I go to a 6. So then I do plan out these things.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. And they do. I mean, I should say like My escort, like at the launch and the landing, my escort was there with me. And actually that same escort joined me a lot of times when I would go to mission control and watch spacewalks and stuff like that. And they do try to think about some of those things. Like if a launch goes poorly, something happens, they do have a plan to kind of get you out of there, because there are other people there and there are tourists who come and watch rocket launches and all this kind of stuff, you know. And so they do have a plan to try to get you away so that you can go, you know, in essence, be kind of like at a, you know, a command center to get information and and do whatever they need to do to try to manage whatever bad thing has happened. But it is, I mean, it's you just realize like, man, because like, you'd be watching these things and friends and family are texting you in real time, like, oh, this is so cool, I'm having such a great time. And it's really fun to have, when things are going well, it's really fun to have other people experiencing it in real time with you.
Yeah.
But you do have to think like, man, if things did not go well, have we thought through how we would manage this so that the right people are finding out about things first versus hearing about it on social media first, or, you know, or just not being scared from lack of information. I mean, there's a whole team of people who think through some of those things, but you can't help but worry about it sometimes. Like, will I know about these things, or will I have the privacy that I would want if something, if something happened?
Yeah. And again, like you said, there's people above your pay grade saying like, well, this is what we'll do. This is how we got you. And this is that to me is where I'm like, I would forget that, because automatically it's a movie, and in those movie settings there are not always those people who are like prepping.
That's right. But in all
that doesn't make for like, good TV.
Yeah. And when I thought about who I was going to invite with me to travel to the other side of the world for that launch, unfortunately for the landing, I would normally have also invited those same kind of people with me for the landing, but because of the pandemic, we weren't allowed to invite anybody to be with us, and we had to quarantine in order to be able to see Drew when he was back on Earth. But the number one piece of advice that people gave me when thinking about who do you want to invite with you to go to the launch, because you only have a certain number of seats, and there is a financial burden. They do have to pay their own way, and international travel is not easy for everyone. But on top of that, they said, you know, it's easy to pick people who you want to party with. Right. What's harder is picking the people who will be the right people if things do not go well. And so the advice was like, do not bring any family members or friends who add stress to your life. You know, bring people who are, you know, are not high maintenance, because like you're not hosting them. You're not the hostess, you know, like people need to be independent. They need to be low maintenance, and they need to be the kind of people that if things go sideways, they will understand that their role is to rally around you and literally circle up around you and the children and do whatever needs to be done to support you in that moment. And in essence, get you back to the States, like, and protect you and comfort you and take care of you. And so that's just a slightly different perspective that you have when you're looking at your list of possible people to invite. Like, who would be, you think, who would I invite? Like, that would be my person. Who would be my person who would take care of this daughter or this daughter or this, you know, my son? Like, and you almost, I will say, I had a person in mind that I'm like, okay, this person would be the one who like would take care of her and take care of him, take care of her. Yeah. If things went sideways, and of course they didn't, spoiler, it was fine.
But yeah, spoiler alert, everything's great. Yeah,
but you'd be, you know, would not be wise to not think through some of those things, because things have happened. So
yeah. Oh man, I love that so much.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network and is sponsored in part by
Hey, I want to break in real quick and tell you about two really exciting things. Number one, did you know or see that I started another podcast? This new podcast is called Moms at Work, and it is for the working mom that works inside and outside her home. It is for all moms, honestly, and it's just for us to have this conversation of breaking down expectations and shaking off guilt and all of these things. I'm going to give you tips and tools that I use in my own life as I work, and we're going to have guests that come on These episodes are going to be short and sweet, 15 to 20 minutes max. If we have a guest, it'll most likely be broken into two episodes because really, as working moms, we don't have a ton of time and I want this to be really, really digestible. So you can find Moms at Work with Jeanette Tapley on any and every podcast player. And I would love for you to leave it a rating, review, and go ahead and follow it because, I mean, you're here with me now, so you're going to want to be with me over there. Trust me. The other thing I want to tell you about is we have a survey live for It's Time for Coffee podcast right now. And if you fill out the survey and do it to its completion, you are entered to win a $100 Amazon gift card that will be given to you on April 2nd, the fourth birthday of It's Time for Coffee. I cannot believe this podcast is turning four. I cannot believe that I've started another podcast, and I cannot wait to hear the advice that I need from you to make sure that this podcast continues to serve you really well. So please, please, please go take the survey. It's linked in the description below. It's super easy. I think it'll take you like at max 2 minutes. And with that 2 minutes, you have the possibility to win $100 to Amazon. Think of all the books you could buy. Oh my gosh, what a gift. It's a gift card for you. So a couple things. Don't forget, be sure you're following Moms at Work podcast with Jeanette Tapley and go fill out that survey for me. Okay. All right. Back to today's show. So again, he's in space. This yes. Global pandemic is happening. He is watching it from.
They watch the news, mm-hmm. and so you know they're watching little like news recaps and stuff. They don't have hours and hours to be like deep diving. So often when he would call me, he'd be like, what's going on back at home? Because we're watching these news stories about things in Italy. Like at the time, you know, it was like building up in Europe. And we're like, is this a European thing? Like what's happening? Right. And then spring break in February, it was like, I remember he called me and we were up near Austin just to get away for the week. And he was like, I heard like things are getting crazy. And I was like, yeah, I sure hope they don't close the schools. And like literally the next morning they closed the airports, you know, and that's when things got serious. It was like once the airports closed, like it felt like every day after that something else serious closed. Yeah. And so every time he'd call for the next, you know, month while things were really just ramping up dramatically, I was like, yeah, the school's closed. Well, today the gym's closed and the store's closed. And like every day it was something crazy. I'm like, yeah, I went to the store and there was like a woman wrapped in trash bags. Like, I don't know what's happening down here. Like, it's just so weird. Now we're wiping down groceries and, you know, and then meanwhile, because at this point his landing was, you know, less than 2 months out and it's clear this isn't going away. It's only getting worse. And so all the NASA people are trying to figure out like, what are we going to do? And I have a lot of sympathy for them because they, like the rest of us, had never dealt with anything like this before. Yeah. And you have these three people, the only people in the world who have not been affected by the pandemic at this point, about to come back to Earth. And how do we do this in a way that keeps them safe? But meanwhile, the way that they would normally get them, they land back in Kazakhstan, the way they get them back, like airports were closed that normally would be open and all these kind of things. So it was like this crazy planes, trains, and automobiles try to get them back here. And then what does that mean for the families in order to then stay with them? And you know, we have to like quarantine and all that kind of stuff, which of course prior to them was like a cute little word that we never really understood. Yeah. Then all of a sudden became very serious. And so we, prior to his landing, we as a family had to quarantine in our house, which wasn't that hard to do because everything was closed.
We've been doing that already, yeah.
Right. But I did have friends who had to drop off groceries and, you know, they had us like taking temperatures multiple times a day. All the stuff that at the time everybody thought was the best thing to do so that when he did land, we could be there. And we stayed with him in the quarantine facility for a couple of days. After a few days, I was like, yeah, the kids and I are going to go home now. it's not exactly a facility designed for children. So I was like, you know what? We'll be back. We'll, you do the rest of your couple of days here, meet us back at home. And pretty much he got home, you know, walked in the front door a couple of days later. And then it was like, he never left. And I don't mean it like as if it was just yesterday. Like it was like he walked in the door and then because everything was closed, there was nowhere for him to go. It was like he never left the house again.
So
that was really weird because, I mean, not living together for And he was in space for 9 months and he was gone a month before that for the pre-launch quarantine, which again, cute, adorable word at the time that we all thought was so quaint. Very different now. So he was gone. You know, you're not with this person for 10 months and then they come home and they just never leave the house. And, and not only that, your kids are home with you too. And they have nowhere to go. So it was like 0 to 60 in reintegration, which I would not recommend for everyone. It was the normal way, like the healthiest way is to usually what they would call titrate a return, which is like little bits at a time. Like you come home and then they have meetings and appointments and stuff so that like you're not together 24/7 after not having seen each other for 10 months. But we were together like 24/7 with all the children trapped in the house, can't go anywhere. It was, you know,
trying, I think is the word.
It was an adjustment. Oh. It was an adjustment. I mean, luckily it wasn't too bad, but it was, you know, it was definitely not the recommended return process.
Well, and it wasn't what you had experienced before. Cause I'm sure when he goes on deployment and comes home, there's that little bit of time to like process and then they come home, but they go back to work. Like they have a day
job.
That's
right.
Still.
And there's a reason for that. You know, I mean, the military has learned that like going from a combat zone one day, and thanks to the, you know, the miracle of aircraft, like that you could be then mowing your lawn the next day. Like that transition, that abrupt transition is not always good for families that like, and that's why when you come back from a deployment, those soldiers, like they give them meetings. Okay, you're going to go in and clean gear. Like they kind of keep them occupied all day. And then after like a couple weeks, then they all take a big block of vacation. They give you a couple weeks to like sniff each other out and get to know each other again before it's like together all the time for good reason, because it is transitions are very stressful. And people used to ask me, you know, prior to him coming home, like, oh, you know, 3 weeks till Drew gets home, like 2 months till Drew gets home, like, aren't you so excited? And it was like, well, of course I miss him and all that stuff. But like, it's, you know, that's like a question from somebody who has never experienced an awkward reunion or a long distance, like, you know, reunion after not being together for a long time, because anybody who's experienced a reunion after a long time apart knows like it's awkward. It's super awkward. Even if you love each other so much and you're 100% dedicated to each other, it's not this like sexy makeout session that they have in movies, you know, like it's like a high, kind of reintroducing yourself and things. I went through like 3 different haircuts while he was gone. Like, I feel like, you know, you change, in big and little ways. The experience changes you.
Yeah.
And the kids had changed a lot. Like, I mean, puberty is a killer, right? I mean, he came home to like 4 different kids who have now different friends, different likes, different, you know, whole new grade. Like he, you know, missed pretty much an entire year of school for them, which in kid years is like 18 adult years. Right. So it was, you know, it was like a new family in some ways, just or slightly offset. So for us, all this time had passed, but for him, it felt like he'd gone up and kind of came back and we were all a little bit different. And so that's, you know, that's awkward. Like you're, and so it's like, yeah, I'm excited. Well, is excited the right word? Like, no, I'm happy. I would say I'm anxious about his return. Yeah. And it will be great. It'll be great to have him home, but like, it takes time to have a really good, healthy, like transition and get back to like a new normal of doing life together.
Yeah. And so good. And it's good that you can articulate that because like I told you before, my husband works nights and I live for the nights that he's at work because we've always done this. We've always had this. And so he's like, I can't sleep when you're not here. I'm like, I sleep like a freaking baby when you're not here. He's like, that's
so
not nice.
Yes.
And I'm like, it's true though. Like I enjoy my evenings when,
I
enjoy my evenings when you're around, but I also really enjoy my evenings alone because we have 3 kids and sometimes it's nice to be like just me.
Yeah. Well, I love you said that because, you know, everybody assumes sometimes some people again, who have just never kind of lived this life and that's okay. Yeah. They assume that like, you're all sad and depressed when your spouse leaves. And it's like, look, if I wasted all my time being sad and depressed, not to say that there were big periods of time I was lonely where I'm lonely and you want a companion and whatever. And it's hard single parenting and it's hard being alone.
Yeah.
However, like, you look for the silver linings. You have to.
Yeah.
And there are some pretty awesome silver linings to living in your own house without financial worry, you know, like, yeah. And making the most of it. And like, some of it is I watch whatever the heck I want on television. I make whatever the heck I want for dinner. I took over the entire bathroom. I stayed up as late as I wanted. I reorganized and decorated several rooms, got rid of a bunch of stuff that I'm sure you would have squawked about.
He'll go looking for later on.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I slept in the middle of the bed, like with all these pillows, you know, like, and you have to, you got to make the most of it. And like, it's funny because my husband says the same thing. I'm like, he's like, oh, I don't sleep as well without you. And I'm like,
Sorry about that.
I don't feel that same way.
like, really? Because that's unfortunate.
Exactly. I suppose most of the times when he's not with me, he's sleeping like in a hotel room with a bad bed, or, you know, on a cot in some third world country.
That's the reason. It's not me. it's because you're uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you come back, you sleep with me in a nice bed. Yeah. I'm always in a nice bed. So I just take over the whole thing.
What's something that your family has learned through this, the military experience that you guys have walked through space experience and through the pandemic, and like, what has like changed the heartbeat of your family?
Well, I definitely think when you live the kind of life we've lived, where like circumstances around you are constantly changing, whether that's where you live or the people who live there, you know, even if we're in a great place with friends around us, you know, in the military community, everybody's on a different cycle of moving. And so your neighbors and friends are constantly shifting at a higher rate than kind of in a different place. And then coming down here and all the craziness of, you know, people going to space, all these kind of things, add the pandemic craziness. I think we've learned, like, you've got to know what your family's foundation is. And it cannot be based on circumstances. Like if your sense of safety or stability or hope is built on your spouse always being home, you know, or something in your environment, or who's in power in government, or whether or not there's illness in the world, or like any number of thousands of things that people build their lives based on, but then they lose that job, or that friend moves away, or, you know, or there's a pandemic and everything shuts down and you can't go to Target anymore, you know, like whatever it is that your life is built on, like it better be something that is unchanging. Mm-hmm. And there are very few things really, you know, I'd argue one thing that is unchanging, right? Like, and I think things like a rocket launch pull that into like sharp focus. And like when you're standing there and you're waiting for this countdown and you realize like this rocket could explode, you are forced to ask yourself, is my life based on this? Like if this rocket were to explode and I became a widow in 10 seconds, what would change about my life? And yeah, a lot of things would change, but I would hope that my foundation would remain the same. And so our faith, like our hope that God is there with us, good times, bad times, pandemic, not pandemic, you know, all these crazy things, like that, we need to double down on that. Because I think when your foundation is built on things that are out of your control, maybe 2 years ago felt like they were in your control, and now things have changed and they're not in your control.
We've learned how many things are not in our control.
That's right. Like this anger and frustration that we see just in the world right now. I see it when I go to the grocery store or when I fly on an airplane. Mm-hmm. It's because people are like, they have become untethered because they have no foundation anymore. This thing that worked, and it may have worked for them for 50 years. And all of a sudden it doesn't work anymore. And they've realized that this thing that they were counting on was actually not, you know, reliable. Eventually all things crumble except God,
You know? Except and so, faith. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You know, even your spouse is going to disappoint you. Yeah. Even friends are going to like, you know, not be there for you at some point. And so it's like, it forces you to really assess where do I find my strength, my hope, my endurance? And if it's, you know, you can choose whatever you want, but like, honestly, like for me, I found if it's not God, like good luck with that. You know, I hope it works for you for a really long time, but like historically, it's probably eventually going to let you down.
Yeah. It just reminds me of standing. It's like that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, like standing before the fire. It's like, even if this is not the way for us, we still believe that he is good and that he is God. It's like, how often can we really, really walk through that and have those moments like our husband blasting off into a rocket ship or in a rocket ship into space, saying like, okay, God, even if, like, I trust you, even if, like, what a beautiful testimony of your life, but also what a beautiful calling that you're giving us to, like, remind us, like, can you stand even if, like, can you believe in your foundation even if? And so I'm so thankful for that. So thankful for that. The last question I always ask, and I'm always so excited to hear about it, is we believe that there's a season for everything under the sun. And right now it's time for coffee. But what is it time for in your own life right now?
Yeah, I feel like this season, the last 6 months especially, have been a season of friends showing up. You know, like if there's one thing that I feel like the pandemic has like really stripped me of, it's my tolerance for empty words from people and like empty gestures and like thoughts and prayers. And so, and that translates even like with my friends, like when somebody's like, we should get coffee sometime. If they don't take out their phone and like immediately start being like, okay, what works for you? Like next week? Good. Excellent. Like, okay, we'll tell it Tuesday. What time? Like, then I'm like, these are empty words. This is just like small talk. This is just, this isn't real. You're not actually interested. And so and it's hard to do that right now, right? So like, I think one of the benefits of hard times and hard seasons is that it strips away our tolerance for a lot of things that we have tolerance for when we have enough. You know, I had a lot more tolerance for like shallow conversations and shallow friends before the pandemic. And it just brings these people who like, who are really willing to show up. And so these friends who are really willing to be like, okay, I'm prioritizing this. I'm prioritizing our friendship. I'm going to advocate for you. I'm going to support you. I'm going to be with you. Even when it requires like sacrifice, even when it requires discomfort, you know, or risk, and this it feels very risky sometimes even just to get together with friends in this season. Yeah. So it's like, and I want to be that friend. Like I've been so inspired by friends where I'm like, I want to just be that kind of friend who you're like, even if she doesn't necessarily agree with everything that I say or do, she will always be my friend. She will always be my advocate. She will always extend grace and mercy and compassion and like, be there and show up and be willing to risk and just be that kind of friend that we all need and that we all like deeply desire and you know and fantasize about having. Like I want to be that kind of friend for my friends.
I love that so much. And I know we didn't get to talk about friendship as much as I wanted to, but your story is just so incredible. So I just love that you're ending with this. And I think that if we are willing to pull out our phones and set it up, oh man, it's such a game changer. Because when we have something like that on our calendar, it just proves where our priorities are at. And it's a really cool thing. And it's something that I'm trying to be a lot better at because I hate to have plans like 6 months in the future. But if I don't have those things, guess what? It's 6 months since I talked to my friend. Like that's unacceptable. Like we have to be better at being good friends. And that means pulling out our phones and setting up those schedules. And so I'm so glad that you said that. Stacey, thank you for sharing your story with us. Thank you for blazing this trail of faith and friendship and being a really fun partner for your spouse. Just I can only imagine the stories that you guys could tell of saying like, you got this. What's your next mission? You're going to space saying yes to that. Like how often am I like, I'm sorry, you want my husband right now. I'm like, I'm sorry, you want to start a whiskey club? What? Like what? And so
go
I just,
for it.
Yeah. So I'm just thankful that you are showing us that it's okay to step out in faith. And it just, it's exciting. And I just am just over the moon. Over the moon.
Oh, space. Pun intended. Hey. I love it.
It really wasn't. I'm just that much of a dork. I'm just excited to have met you and to call you a friend and to share your story.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me. It's been so fun.
Okay. What a crazy story. I just think about Stacey standing there watching her husband blast into space. and just how different it was when he came home, but even now how different life is. So I just really want to encourage you to go follow Stacy on social media. She's a really fun hang on Instagram, and thank her for having coffee with us. Thank her for her story and for her family service. It's a really cool thing that they have served our country and our families in such a radical way. All right, I'll see you next week when it's time for coffee. Thank you so much for joining us for coffee today. I'm so excited that you made time in your busy schedule to have coffee with me and my guest. If you want to connect on a deeper level, I hope that you will join our email community. The email community is a great way for us just to connect on a little bit deeper level. It's a place for us to email back and forth, to correspond about all things, and I hope that you will join us there. To make sure you never miss an episode, make sure you're following It's Time for Coffee podcast on your favorite podcast player. That way, each week when a new episode comes out, it'll pop right up in your queue and it'll be ready for you to listen to. And if you love today's episode, I would love for you to leave us a rating or review on your favorite player. You can just do that by hitting those stars or commenting about what you love about the episode. It makes my day, and I read every single one of them. And I love hearing how we can meet you right where you're at. So thanks for doing that. And if you haven't already, go do it for me. I would appreciate it. Okay, friend, I'll see you next week when it's time for coffee.